We are live at the Michelob Ultra Club, right here off of the 17th fairway, guys. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. We're going to get you caught up on a leaderboard here at the Tour Championship, day one. Obviously, things will conclude on Sunday. And right now, there are a lot of guys who are going low, Mike, and Rory is not one of them. I think he just picked up a birdie on 14 or 15, his first one of the day. He's now one under. He's been even all day. But Minwoo Lee, you said it, man. 8 under, that's a hell of a day here at East Lake.
Yeah, man. The worst round is Cameron Young. He's making the turn at 2 over. But as you said, Rory McIlroy, to be 1 under normally would be pretty good. But when you look at the rest of the leaderboard, Minwoo Lee from Australia is at 8 under. Victor Hovland, we saw go by earlier, at 6 under. Ryan Fox, British opener, open winner, at 4 under. Tommy Fleetwood at 4 under. And a lot of holes to play. And Morikawa on a heater. 4 under through 12. They're going to be passing by here at the Mick Ultra tent in a bit. But yeah, man, the best golfers in the world are getting after it, and some of the guys you're expecting to get after it aren't doing it yet.
Yeah, not yet. We'll get you caught up on what Scottie Scheffler's doing. What's going on with Scottie Scheffler? That's all on the way, but right now, let's talk some dogs. More on the Falcons as they get ready for their final preseason game against the Dolphins, and more on my disappointment. That's to come. But right now, Mike Griffith is here from Dog Nation, AJC.com. Mike, I want to start with what we saw this week from Greg Sankey and other conferences as they addressed the professional players returning to college football. Look, I'm glad they did it, but I still thought it was a day late, dollar short. I felt like it was reacting instead of being proactive. Tell me your thoughts on Greg Sankey and these other conferences and how they reacted.
Yeah, you know, the rule on the 5 for 5 didn't pass till June, so yeah, it is reactive. And you know, there's not much else they can do other than say, hey, it's not happening. And, you know, if LSU or anybody else wants to challenge it and go ahead with it, you know, the conference does have the power to enforce rules. So they can make rules about, you know, what will happen to the head coach or the program. I mean, conferences really have more power than the NCAA does.
So when's the next phase of this thing? I mean, are we going to have, like, SEC on SEC violence? LSU, I mean, I presume the SEC can find a judge, will do things their way, we'll keep doing the battle of the restraining orders.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it's one of those unfortunate distractions. None of us want to be talking about the week before the start of the season, but it's pretty clear that LSU's all in on doing whatever it takes, and, you know, if they think they've found a loophole and they feel strongly enough about it, they can pursue it. But, you know, the SEC presidents and athletic directors, they met. And they had a 16-0 vote decrying it, and then I think they had a 15-0 vote on the penalty phase. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Just a little bit more off-season drama on the fringe.
How do you see Greg Sankey as a conference commissioner? Do you think he's had a couple of missteps? Do you feel like he's in a good spot as we continue to move forward? What's your evaluation on Greg?
I think he's too good for his own good. I mean, I think he, at times I think that he tries to do what's in the best interest of all of college football and all of college sports. It's a tough balance to balance what's good for everyone with what's good for your conference. I don't necessarily think other conferences operate that way, or not all the other ones, I should say. I think Jim Phillips of the ACC does a really good job. You know, to me, my jury's kind of out on Big 12, Big 10, self-serving. But, you know, look, it's a money game, and anytime there's dollars involved, you know, you're going to have people that are doing the best they can to position their conference or their constituents as well as they can. But I think in Sankey's case, he's looked at more of a leader of all of college football, and I think maybe when he went to the 9-game schedule, I think he really believed that the Big Ten was going to sign off on the 16-team playoff as they'd suggested. I don't think he thought they were going to move the goalposts and go 24 teams.
And that was the thing, as we talked with Mike Griffith here from Dog Nation. It just seemed like when you had some coaches at the SEC meetings down in Destin saying, like, hey, man, you're selling us on 16. We're going to this meat grinder. We're in a kill-all or kill-or-be-killed conference that unfortunately doesn't get respected as far as strength of schedule with the College Football Playoff Committee. So we're cutting off our own nose here. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, going to the 19 playoff, you know, now that's why Kirby said he's for 16 or 24. But obviously the more teams that make it, the more room you have and the more margin you have for error. And, you know, part of the reason, you know, Kirby's talked about wanting to go 24 or 16 is he wants to play good opponents. You know, but what did we see happen in Texas last year, right? They go to Columbus, Ohio. I think they outgained Ohio State by 100 yards, lost by a touchdown. And, you know, they don't make the playoff as a 3-loss team. I mean, yeah, you can point to a loss at Florida, but, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of shame in losing at the Swamp. point is, if Texas doesn't play that game against Ohio State and play some pushover, they're in the college football playoff. And so a lot of these programs are losing the incentive to play those sorts of games. I don't think any of us want to see that. And that's why 16 or 24 is the ultimate answer. And it's just a matter of getting the SEC and the Big Ten to agree on how it works and making it lucrative enough for it to work. Because if you go to the 16 or 24, the regular season is going to lose more value. That's a fact.
Mike Griffith, our guest, guys, from DogNationAJC.com. We're live at the Tour Championship. More coming up on the leaderboard here in a little bit. But, Mike, I want to ask you about what David Pollack said about Gunnar Stockton. He said he needs to take a step forward in arm strength. And here's my impression on this. Like, you can get stronger. Certainly you can increase your velocity with throwing the football. But I think these special arm talent kids, man, they just have it, right? And you get them and they get better. But I don't know if you can create that, especially in an off season. Tell me your thoughts on the arm strength of Gunnar, and do you agree with David Pollack when he talks about that's where he needs to take a step forward in?
Well, you know, first of all, I got a lot of respect for David's opinions, you know, but from what I've seen, I don't know that the arm strength is, to your point, I don't know how much stronger it can get. I mean, Danny Werfel didn't have the strongest arm, and, you know, he did pretty well in the Heisman Trophy race and won a national title. So maybe in terms of becoming an NFL quarterback, I'd say David's right. You know, but at the collegiate level, you know, I think Gunnar's arm's plenty strong enough. I think it's timing. Right. I think it's footwork. I think it's, you know, getting through his progressions quicker. And he's got a receiving core where he's replacing, you know, five of the top six pass catchers from a year ago. And, you know, he needs to get in sync with these cats fast. And they got to catch up. They got to catch the ball. You know, Isaiah Canyon was asked about drops, and he just kind of shrugged and said drops are going to happen. And, you know, I don't know that Kirby Smart would be quite that casual on the topic. But, you know, Canyon's a talented guy they got from Georgia Tech, and they're going to be counting on him in a big way. And, you know, London Humphreys is another guy that I think is going to be a go-to guy, vastly underrated. And, of course, you know, you've had an opportunity now to, you know, see how these tight ends are working out, and they've all been very impressive as well. So Georgia's got some weapons in the pass game, but most of all, they've got an incredibly powerful offensive line, and if they can run the ball effectively, there'll only be one or two teams on their schedule that can beat them.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the schedule itself. Venables gets a big contract extension last week from Oklahoma. Seems like, you know, they're by the way, Mateer looks like, I don't know, he's had the Joe Weider arm blaster out all off season. Is that a game that you worry about? I mean, as far as the Georgia schedule, is one that you're a little more concerned about than others, Mike?
Mike Griffith, is he there?
Why does this always happen to me? It is never, ever once has Carl asked the question, and then there's no response. If you listened to the show yesterday, it happened again.
It did.
Every time a phone drops out, it's when I ask the question.
It's true.
And we've been working together since 2014. Never once have you go, you know, reset, hey, so-and-so, what do you think about – hello?
Nothing.
It's always my question.
No, it's true. I don't know what it is. It's the weirdest thing.
Skip it. It's a dumb question. Forget it. Forget I asked it.
We'll get Mike back on here in just a second. But yes, that's crazy. All right, while we're waiting for him, let's talk about what's going on out here at Eastlake, because the leaderboard, guys, is getting interesting. It's day one of the Tour Championship. And again, remember, the leaderboard is brought to you by a variety of folks, including Trajan Wealth, your trusted local fiduciary, and Bobby Jones Golf Course. Golf open to everyone and by Twin Peaks. What's it look like?
Hey, man, Minwoo Lee, that is the dude with a little mustache from Australia.
Yep.
And again, one of those guys I joked around when we saw Tommy Fleetwood on the driving range. It's like, how do these guys generate that club speed and get that ball on plane and hit that ball 300 yards? Well, anyway, Minwoo Lee's doing a lot of that in the clubhouse at 8-under. Victor Hovland at 6-under also in the clubhouse. Ashke Bhatia at 5-under, and Ryan Gerard, who made the top 30 at 5-under, he's got one more hole to play. Ryan Fox, guy that I'm pulling for, we like his style, plays quick, won the British Open, he's at 4-under. Tommy Fleetwood at 4-under with a lot more holes to play, including a couple of par fives. And then you got Colin Morikawa, 4-under, he's playing with Tommy at number 13. Xander Schauffele at 3-under, Sam Burns at 3-under, Patrick Cantlay, the human filibuster, at 2-under. And just real quick, the guys that you want to see, they've got plenty of golf to play, but Rory just having a real struggle today with the putter again, Carl. As you mentioned, you saw it. He's at 1 under. Scottie Scheffler making the turn at 2 under, certainly in a position to put a big number up today.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, with the top of the board right now, with guys in the clubhouse at 6 and 8 under, Scottie could certainly make a run for that. And I think that's what the number's got to be. You got to be at least 5, Mike. At least 4 to 5. Give yourself a chance tomorrow, and then Saturday moving day. All right, let's finish up with Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. And Mike Bell, go ahead and repeat your question.
I know we just talked about the meat grinder of the schedule, Mike. Do you worry about a guy like, I know Mateer looks like he's bigger and badder, and you might have to let him pee in the cup. I want to see what's going on there. But does Oklahoma concern you, even though it's a home game?
I worry more about Oklahoma's defense. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the four teams I think has, you know, posed the biggest threats. I mean, you know, you could debate whether Oklahoma's a bigger threat than Stanford or Florida's a bigger threat at the Benz. You know, I think Alabama on the road's the biggest threat. You know, we'll see about Ole Miss. I'm somewhat skeptical of where Ole Miss will be in November. You know, I don't know what, you know, Pete Golding's going to do without, you know, the Lane Kiffin game plan. I do think a lot of Trinidad Chambliss. I don't think it's the same Rebels, though. So, you know, it's debatable whether it's that Oklahoma game or that Florida game. But, you know, because it's the SEC home opener and, you know, Georgia won't be real tested by then. I mean, they got a road trip to Arkansas. You know, that would be a bump in the road. But, you know, Oklahoma's going to know who they are, guys. You know, I believe they play in Ann Arbor the second week of the season against UM.
Yeah, they do. Tell me what you think about teams, most of these Power Fours that are really good are spending over $20 million. And, Mike, I guess my question is, you know, is this number just going to continue to go up? One coach was quoted as saying, if you're not spending $20 million, you're not going to compete. And it's just like, okay, so that's the starting number? What are we talking about here in 3 or 4 years for college football?
Now, probably collective bargaining agreement before then. I mean, you kind of go back to, you know, what happened in the NFL when, you know, Matthew Stafford and Sam Bradford, you know, landed those giant, you know, rookie deals in 08 and 09. And, you know, players union got together and said, hey, we got to do something about this. And now they kind of have the pre-slotted rookie deals. But, you know, they have a collective bargaining agreement in place where they can do that. And, you know, collegiate sports doesn't. And to this point, you know, college leadership's, you know, not wanting to go in that direction. They're hoping that congressional oversight will help them out. But it's really not the end-all, be-all answer. So to me, it's going to happen until it becomes enough of a financial crisis that, you know, collegiate leadership will, you know, work to get a collective bargaining agreement in place for the student-athletes.
Before we let you go, what'd you write on today, or what do you have coming up this weekend? I know college football starts this weekend, even though the Dogs are not playing.
Yeah, I mean, I did a feature on one of their, you know, fifth-year guys, a linebacker by the name of Terrell Foster, and, you know, he hasn't started a game yet, but you know what? We said the same thing about Quay Walker going into his senior year, and he was a first-round draft pick. And, you know, Channing Tindall, I mean, it's an amazing stat. I mean, you know, Atlanta Falcons linebacker, he played 50 games, 50-0 at Georgia, didn't start one, and was a third-round draft pick. Now, I don't know if I'm going to put Foster in the same sentence with either one of those two guys. I mean, you know, Tindall is such an incredible freakish fast athlete, and, you know, Quay Walker is just, you know, classic thumper and hard hitter now with Las Vegas. But, you know, the Foster kid, I've seen 30 making plays. You know, Georgia put out a video. He looks like he's got a pick six. The practice I went to, I saw that number 30 flash. And, you know, you start seeing a number pop up enough. Now, that's a talented linebacking core, right? I mean, Justin Williams is about to pop. Chris Cole, Raylan Wilson, those guys are all NFL draft picks. But, you know, Foster is a guy I think could emerge. And, you know, just an embarrassment of riches on defense. You know, as much as we talk about Gunner and unproven receiving core and mediocre running backs, you know, they've got an incredible offensive line and I believe maybe one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, Ellis Robinson right now, I mean, this guy's just sick. He's all over the field and he's just playing amazing. So you got a shut down corner there. And, of course, K.J. Bolden, you know, proven to, you know, be worth every penny they paid him when they got him out of Buford.
Great stuff. Mike Griffith, follow him, guys, AJC.com, and, of course, Dog Nation. We will talk to you next week, and we will be talking about games. Thank God. Mike, take care.
Yeah. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks,
man.
Brother.
Good stuff. Hey, when we come back, man, Mike mentioned it yesterday. I want you to hear a little bit of it. Za'Darius Smith laying down a heartfelt message about why he made his return to the NFL. And Falcon fans, we need to embrace this, man. I think he can help
us. Yeah.
We'll let you hear some of it when we come back live at the Tour Championship next. We are live at the Tour Championship, guys. Today is day one. Of course, it's a four-day tournament, and we love being out here at East Lake. One of my buddies just hit me up, one of my golf buddies. He said, dude, does this course look as good in person as it does on TV? Because sometimes you think 4D, or 4K, should I say, you're watching it on TV and like, oh, It looks even better in person. They've done an amazing job.
It really is. It's in fantastic shape. I think all the rain we've had has got it just right. And, of course, that rough, you can't keep it on a fairway. Good luck. Because it's like that commercial where the guy has the machete in front of your club. You're going to need it. My cousin's up from Florida, and he's loving it because we're here at 17, and he's got all these great pictures of all the big names coming right by. And, you know, unobstructed view, I should say, and Rory making his way up here. And, again, some of the bigger names will be coming through here in about an hour.
No doubt. All right, man. Want to remind you, football coverage on 92.9 The Game's presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi. One price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity. Imagine that as we are live today inside of the Ultra Michelob Ultra Club tent. Out here off the 17. And, Mike, yesterday you brought this up. We didn't play it because it had happened while the show was going on, but Za'Darius Smith, one of our newest Falcons who came out of retirement, was addressing the media and talking about a variety of things. And you said, like, after hearing this, and if you've not seen it, okay, we suggest you go watch it. It's cool. But it maybe gives you a little bit more perspective on him as the person, and then him as the football player, right? Because that's what he was really embracing and talking about. Because you wonder sometimes, hey, they called a guy. He's sitting on the couch. Does he just want to go get a check?
Why did Za'Darius Smith tap out last season? And then we found out as he basically kind of bared his soul in the interview room in front of the media, talked about what he's dealing with his mom and his personal life and just how joyful it is to be back playing football.
So here is a couple of things from him. Za'Darius Smith on football and his happy place.
Yeah, man, because I could see this as my happy place. Give me a second.
Yeah, all the time you need to be, man.
But yeah, this is my happy place, man. Come back, play football. I was in a dark place. But, you know, coming out, running out on the field, you know, the fans. Not only just the fans, man, the joy that I get from winning and just getting sacks, you know. When I retired, I think I had 70 sacks, man, so now I'm trying to reach 100. So any way I can get to it will be good, but, man, I'm happy to be back, man. And like I said, this is my happy place and ready to get going.
Everybody is going through something.
Right.
And that's why I would suggest – that you be nice to everybody. And it's one thing with the recent passing of Dolly Parton. That's why we love her. Dolly was the same person to everybody. Didn't matter what you looked like, where you came from. She treated everybody the same. And just being nice, because everybody's going through something. And sometimes you go, man, that guy's pretty good. Why is he retiring? Mike, what? You know, he's still got something left in the tank. And you just don't know personally what people are dealing with. So it was interesting for him to share that. I want you to hear one more thing about why he retired last season. This was what Mike was alluding to.
So I wasn't supposed to retire. Said I wasn't going to tell this story, but I'm going to tell it. Yeah, man. Got a phone call from my mom's doctor telling me that she don't have much longer to be on this earth. So I let the team know. Obviously, they wasn't trying to let me leave, but that was the only thing I had left to retire. So I retired, dealt with that. After losing my mom, I lost my grandma. Then after my grandma, I just lost my dad. So y'all obviously know what I've been through.
That's tough. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's
and there
tough.
Was some extended audio where he pauses and he catches himself. And, you know, he composes himself and he continues. And it's just, that's why with Michael Penix Jr., are we overanalyzing how he sounds, what he's talking about? But here's a guy who is – had a tremendous career, by any metric, a great NFL career, and he's out last year because he was spending time with his mom, who's about to pass, and now he's back, and the joy he's got, that's why I said yesterday, talking to Joe Patrick, it sounds a lot like Calais Campbell, and he's had his own personal issues off the field, nothing to do with him, his brother, but Calais Campbell's a guy that, you know, comes in as an OG and a leader, and, you know, this guy accepts that role. Hey, can you be the voice in that room? He says, sure. I'll do all of that. And he's one of the first guys who runs on the field when they score the touchdown up in Indy. So, I mean, look, I don't know if they'll be able to, as we're using the phrase money ball, some of its parts, find those sacks that walked out the door or are out now because of a suspension or injury. But he's certainly going to give you his all, and hopefully he's going to drive some of these younger guys, man. I love it.
I do, too. And the Calais Campbell, Mike, example, I think is a really good one for us. Because remember, when he got here, it was like, man, he's old. Can he help us? And Calais Campbell actually did. He played well considering what we were expecting. And he's still playing. I mean, he's back with the Ravens, I think.
Right.
You know,
went one more time.
Yeah, went to Phoenix to play with the Cardinals.
He's out of Miami before that. Right.
So, but we wish the best for Za'Darius Smith. And again, does this give me a little extra to maybe root for him? Yeah, man.
Right.
I think, yeah, because he has put his heart and soul on the table and said, look, this is what I'm dealing with, and right. I just want to come play some football.
Yeah, man, I know that the Falcons lose what we estimated between Leonard Floyd, who's not here this year, and with Pierce Jr. and with Jalen Walker. There's 25 sacks.
Whew.
So you're going to find that? I mean, this guy's got 70.5 sacks in his career. He's got a great relationship with Stefanski. Likes Stefanski. He had his choice. He's from Alabama. Talked about being closer to home.
Yep.
So he's really, I did not have Za'Darius Smith on our team, on my bingo card. This is a guy you and I talked about like 5 years ago. Or six, longer than that,
it's
2019,
true.
6 years or 7 years ago, saying, I'd love to get this guy as a free agent. Well, we got him at the end of his career.
Yeah, 404-726-0929. Look, we need some feel-good stories, okay?
Right.
We had one enough. Just being honest with you guys, we still don't know what this quarterback situation is going to look like, but I'm all down for some feel-good stories. And this hopefully can be one of them. And I hope, by the way, the Michael Penix thing, Mike, ultimately is a feel-good story. But that comes with winning. It doesn't come with him just coming back and being okay and average. So, look, there are a lot of things that I think the season is going to tell us about this football team, not only for this season but moving forward. But I like what I heard from Za'Darius, and it's heartfelt. And I said to Mike, you know, some guys just want to go get a check, man. Some guys are like, well, screw it. They want me back. I'll go back, and I'll go get $2 or $3 million or $6 million.
Right.
I think he's coming back for the right reasons.
Hey, man, we're live here at East Lake, the Tour Championship. We had a conversation earlier in the show. We're going to fire that up about what Michael Penix Jr. had to say in regards to being asked about where he's at, you know, and the only having three 11-on-11s and sounding like he was reluctant, even if it was available to him, to play on Friday night, which, again, we're just dying to see some Penix out there. And it just sounds like a lot of guys hit us up in the last half hour on the text line saying, again, you're making too much out of this, Michael Penix fans. Other guys saying, I'm on Penix's side, but it's just strange to hear a pro athlete talk that way about not itching to get back on the field, raring to go, as you said.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, flat out. I just am. Like, I want to believe, and I want him to be everything that we drafted him for. I need him to be the franchise quarterback. But that's not what franchise quarterbacks do. Franchise quarterbacks inspire. More importantly, they want to be on the field every single opportunity they can get. And it just feels like if they even asked him, they even gave him a choice, it didn't feel like he was gonna say, yeah, you know what? I'm glad you guys asked me. I want to play a series, coach. I mean, like, he was totally against it. And you're going to tell me it's all about the doctors, man. Look, I hear all this medical advice, but at the end of the day, I said this earlier, you couldn't keep Michael Jordan off the floor. He had a broke foot. He didn't want to be on the bench. There's something to this. We'll get into it at 5. Mike, what do we have coming up in Guy Talk?
All right, man, you got a couple of things going down. The cancel culture has really hit hard on this Callaway Golf video we talked about
yesterday.
Unbelievable. If you're not familiar with the story about good golf, and the CEO released a big statement. We'll get into that. A lot of folks are saying, come on, guys. Other folks are saying, nope, you can't have a video where a woman gets pushed to the ground. There's never going to be a way to rationalize it. No one's going to get the joke. So stupid on your part. Either way, that conversation's on the way. Also coming up, a wedding. We've all been at some weddings where you're meeting the in-laws for the first time, or maybe you already know the in-laws, and I can attest to this. I did this with my sister's wedding, but never once did I think of grabbing a butter knife and trying to stab somebody on the other side of the family. We'll explain. It's coming up in a very interesting, criminally related Guy Talk.